The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, plus a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Ahead of the budget this Wednesday, both Andrew Marr and Sophie Ridge were joined by the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak. With the government's roadmap for ending the lockdown having been published last week, all eyes are now on Sunak and the economic levers that he will be pulling as the government prepares to reopen the country for business. With restrictions still not forecast to end until June, Ridge asked Sunak if he was planning to extend the furlough scheme.
Will the furlough scheme last for a while longer? It's due, of course, to finish in April, but the restrictions are not going to lift, or all the restrictions won't lift till June.
Well, when it comes to support in general, I said at the beginning of this crisis that I would do whatever it took to protect people, families and businesses through this crisis, and I remain completely committed to that. The Prime Minister, in the roadmap, set out a path for us to recover and reopen, and I want to support people and businesses along that path.
So it's going to be extended.
I'm not going to comment on specific policies, but I want to make sure people realise that, you know, we are going to be there to support them. And if you look at our track record, we went big, we went early, and there's more to come next week. With regard to airports, for example, they had a generous break on their business rates over this past year. The furlough scheme, I know, has been helpful for many people employed in that industry. I know how difficult it is, and I want them to have the reassurance that we are here to keep supporting people as we reopen the economy.
Ridge also asked if the dates given in the government's roadmap stood a chance of being brought forward if the vaccine rollout and other circumstances continue to exceed expectations.
I understand, of course, you say that it's going to be driven by data, not dates. So does that mean if the data is better than expected, that roadmap could happen quicker than you've laid out?
Well, what the Prime Minister laid out was a series of steps with appropriate gaps between them for us to understand the impact of each step. And as he said, what we want is a cautious but irreversible approach. That's why we've taken the approach that we have. And those will be the earliest dates that we think we can do the various things that we've laid out. But we're doing everything we can to make sure that it is hopefully irreversible. That's what we want to see.
What I don't understand is if you say it's driven by data and not dates, but you say it can only move in one direction, as in it can only slow down, but it can't speed up, then it doesn't really feel like it is driven by data. It feels like it's driven by dates.
Well, it wants to be cautious, right? Because I think what we want, and as you talked about businesses before in your opening, what businesses don't want is a stop-start approach to this. We want to know that it's a one-way road, and that's why it's cautious. We've given the earliest of dates to give a sense of timing and a sense of direction, and then obviously we might have to adjust those if things are not going exactly as we would like. But look, the early signs are promising. We're seeing great news with the rollout of the vaccine, not just the take-up of it, but also the efficacy of the vaccine. The data that we're getting is showing us that it is working. So I think that should give us all a sense of confidence and optimism about the future, that we can make progress on that roadmap and, as you said, hopefully slowly get our lives back to normal.
Andrew Marr challenged Sunak over the Eat Out to Help Out scheme, which he put in place last August. The scheme has been blamed for helping to raise transmission of the coronavirus over the final months of 2020.
Jonathan Van Tam said this week about this. He said, when you put people together to eat and socialise over a meal, over a table, as we all like to do, and maybe a little drink, is also consumed at the same time, and the volume goes up, of course it is likely there is some transmission. Was that a mistake? And are you going to do the same this summer?
Well, the hospitality industry, if you're asking, is it a mistake to open the hospitality
because
industry...
Because of what happened to transmission?
Well, the hospitality industry... Well, first of all, lots of things we do cause transmission, right? And we have to balance all of these things. And those are difficult decisions that we all have to make, whether it's what's the right time to bring our children back to school, reopen businesses.
And I'm talking very specifically about Eat Out to Help Out, and I'm asking you whether you now think, with hindsight, that was a mistake.
No, because the decision that we made was to try and do our best to protect the over 2 million people that work in that industry. And you talked about young people before and the tragedy that this crisis has caused for their employment prospects. Young people disproportionately work in that industry, as do women, as do those who are on lower incomes. So as a matter of social justice, trying to protect those jobs, I believe, is incredibly important. And that's why, for example, today, our grants of up to £18,000 for those types of businesses will also help protect those kinds of jobs.
Ridge brought up a comment reported in the Sunday Times that Sunak is alleged to have made to an audience of Conservative MPs.
You say you believe in low taxes. Now, according to the Sunday Times, you told MPs last week that you want to plug the £43 billion black hole so you can cut taxes in a pre-election budget. I mean, that sounds an awful lot like playing politics with the recovery. Did you say that?
No, I think in terms of specific numbers, I think it's a bit hard for anyone to be precise about specific numbers.
But did you say that to MPs?
I don't recognise that figure, actually. Being specific, so specific with numbers at this stage, when there's so much economic uncertainty, I don't think actually anyone could do that.
Okay, so you don't recognise the figure, but did you tell MPs last week that you want to cut taxes in a pre-election budget?
I would like to be able to keep taxes low for people in general. I'm a Conservative and I believe in that. But I want to deliver our promises that we made to the British people, that we would be responsible with their money, that we would look after the nation's finances, and we would deliver strong public services. And given the shock that coronavirus has caused us, I think it's right for me to have acted in the way that I have, provide the support that we are providing and will continue to provide.
It sounds like you did say this. That you would, you know, try and rebalance the finances in the short term so you could cut taxes for a pre-election budget. It sounds like you did.
I think in the short term, what we need to do is protect the economy and keep supporting the economy through the roadmap. And over time, what we need to do is make sure that our public finances are sustainable. That's what we've been talking about levelling with people, about what that's going to require. That isn't going to happen overnight. That is going to be work that takes time, given the scale of the shock that we've experienced. But if you're asking me, you know, do I want to deliver low taxes for people? Of course I do.
Ma also spoke to the Shadow Chancellor, Annalise Dodds, and asked her if Labour would be backing tax increases by the Chancellor.
If the Chancellor, we don't know yet, but if the Chancellor proposes raising corporation tax in the budget, Labour would vote against that.
If there's a long-term plan for changing the corporation tax regime, we will look at that favourably because, as I say, we've been critical of the fact that the Conservatives pulled it again. Well, they have a short-term plan, of course, to increase council tax, which is most definitely harmful. And I would be concerned about additional taxes on business right now, particularly if there aren't changes to allowances, etc. This is currently really clamping down on business confidence, on confidence in our recovery, and it's not what any other country is doing right now, yet our country's had the worst economic crisis of any major economy.
Ma also asked Dodds why Labour did not seem to be seizing the opportunity to push for the £20 a week increase in universal credit to be made permanent.
Again, you know, there's the £20 uplift. And we know it's expensive, £6 billion a year and all the rest of it. It reaches a lot of families. And again, there is a debate about how long it should go on for. Some people are saying it should carry on for 6 months, some people a year. Some people say it should go on forever. Again, what is your view?
Well, in the near term, what we've got to do is be clear to families that in the middle of a pandemic, they should not be seeing £20 less a week coming in when they're struggling. So the Chancellor's got to be clear on that. He should have been clear on it many weeks ago, but at the very least, he should be clear during the budget that during the pandemic, we will see that £20 uplift maintained. But in the longer term, what we really need to see is reform, radical reform, indeed scrapping that universal credit system, because it simply has not worked for families. You look at the self-employed, for example,
what they've struggled with. I mean, you want your own scheme, that's clear, but you're not in government. The election's years away. People need support and need to know what's going to happen right now. That £20 uplift is incredibly important for some of the most struggling families to balance their budgets right now. What is the case against Labour saying keep the £20 uplift for good?
Well, look, we've set out a range of different measures that we want to see in relation to universal credit. We also want to see, for example, the initial loan turned into a grant. We want to see a scrapping of the cap.
Straightforward.
And we want to make sure that families have the support that they need for the future. That's why we said during this pandemic, we said it many, many months ago, and the government is trailing in the wake of this, that we needed to see that uplift maintained during the pandemic. But I'm not going to abandon our commitment to reform universal credit because it's needed.
I'm not expecting you to. I am just slightly, in fact, quite a lot perplexed at the moment because it seems to me that supporting an in perpetuity £20 extra on universal credit is exactly the kind of thing that a Labour Party coming out of a pandemic could say yes to. And you can't. Why not?
But Andrew, we've been clear that we don't want to stick with this system for the reasons that I've just set out. It's been shown to manifestly not support people in the way that they need. It's missed out huge numbers of people who've needed support. People have got to wait for 5 weeks
before
they get that help. And that's why we've said to government some time ago, be clear about that £20 uplift while we're in the middle of this pandemic. Actually get rid of that 5-week wait as well.
And finally, Ridge interviewed the new leader of the Scottish Labour Party, Anas Sarwar, and sought his view on a second independence referendum ahead of the Holyrood elections this May.
If the SNP win a majority in the elections that are coming up, will they have a mandate for a second referendum?
Look, I think the first thing to say on that is there's a poll out today that shows that yes is not in the lead. So we've heard a lot about significant polls leading up to this point where yes have been in the lead. But I would go further than that. I actually think it's, of course, it's for the Scottish people to choose their own future. But actually, is it the right thing to have a referendum? And I think coming through the collective trauma of COVID, where we've been separated from our families and our loved ones, but we've actually come together like a country like never before. The idea that we come through this and go straight into a divisive referendum campaign, I just don't think is the right thing to do. Instead, I think it's right that we focus on rebuilding our country, because what people are worried about right now is they're worried about their loved ones staying safe, they're worried about when they're going to get a vaccine, they're worried about if and when they're going to go back to work, they're worried about their child's education or mental health, they're worried about the planet we're going to leave our children and our grandchildren, they're worried about the cancelled operations or the failure to get a cancer diagnosis because of a pause in the screening programme. These are all massive, massive issues. And I would much rather we had political leadership that focused on those issues and tried to reunite our country rather than divide our country again. And on that, I actually don't think even Nicola Sturgeon would be advocating a referendum right now. But I think she's more focused on healing the wounds in her political party than she is about healing the wounds in the country.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffeehouse Shots podcast on the iTunes Store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/eveningblend. Thanks for listening, and do join us again next week.